Omo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Omo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Omo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Omo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Being fixed in the mood of loving friendship
with the spiritual master,
who is one's worshipable deity.
Satvara,
without becoming bewildered due to material passion. Artha Jigyasu,
desiring
knowledge
of the Absolute Truth.
Anasuyo,
free from
what? Anasuyo, free from envy. Amoga,
Bhak.
Completely free from useless conversation. Here's the translation. The servant or disciple of the spiritual master should be free from false prestige, never considering himself to be the doer. He should be active and never lazy, and should give up all sense of proprietorship over the objects of the senses, including his wife, children, home, and society. He should be endowed with feelings of loving friendship towards the spiritual master, and should never become deviated or bewildered. The servant or disciple should always desire advancement in spiritual understanding, should not envy anyone, and should always avoid useless conversation. Please repeat. The servant or disciple. Of the spiritual master. Should be free from false prestige. Never considering himself to be the doer. He should be active. And never. What's the next word?
Lazy.
Never lazy. And should give up all sense of proprietorship
over the objects of the senses,
including his wife,
children,
home,
and society.
He should be endowed
with feelings
of loving friendship
toward the spiritual master,
and should never become deviated
or bewildered.
The servant or disciple
should always desire
advancement in spiritual understanding,
should not envy anyone,
and should always avoid
useless conversation.
Here's the purport. No one can claim to be the permanent proprietor of his so-called wife, family, home, society, and so on. Such material relationships appear and disappear like bubbles on the surface of the ocean. No one can claim to be the creator of the material elements that produce one's home, society, and family. If it were a fact that parents were the ultimate creator of the bodies of their children, children would never die before their parents. The parents would simply create new bodies for the children. Similarly, parents would also not die, because they would create new bodies for themselves in place of the old ones. Actually, God creates everyone's bodies, as well as the material elements with which we build our material societies. Therefore, before death drags these things out of our grasp, we should voluntarily engage them in the loving service of the spiritual master, who is a bona fide representative of Lord Krishna. Then such material objects, instead of causing lamentation, will be the cause of happiness. Sri Chaitanya Manukistam Sapita Vena Mutale Sayam Katamayam Dadapi Savana Vansha Kapatuvias Chas Kriva Sundar Yudhita Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavyo Namaha. Who remembers something from the verse? Without looking, because it's easier to look and then remember, because you don't have to remember. Who remembers something from the verse? Who's speaking, first of all? Lord Krishna is speaking. To whom? Who is he speaking? To whom is he speaking? And why is he speaking? He's speaking. Why?
To give him knowledge.
Why does he want knowledge?
So that he can.
Why does Krishna want to give him knowledge?
Because he has to come and preach to everyone.
Uddhava has asked Krishna if he could go with him, because he understands that Krishna is about to end his pastimes within this world. If an ordinary person, not ordinary, but if there is someone who we actually have a loving relationship with, and it is time for them to leave this world, we feel so much grief, because, of course, we don't, if there is suffering involved, we don't like to see their suffering. It is so terrible to see the suffering of anyone, what to speak of a loved one. But more than that, in a relationship, if we have a relationship with someone, a loving relationship, then the thought that we will not see them again is so difficult for a human being to bear. And even, it's not only human beings, we see this in Vrindavan, that when a monkey dies, all the members of his family become very upset and very angry. Very angry. So it is natural to live for relationships. And Krishna is, in this Uddhava Gita, he's instructing Uddhava in such a way that Uddhava can continue his relationship with him, although Krishna is about to leave this world. He's teaching him. Uddhava actually wants to leave also. He thinks, because his relationship with Krishna is so deep, that without Krishna in this world, there is no use for me to be. But Krishna wants him to remain in this world because he has some service for Udhavata Prasanna, a preaching service. So Uddhava is thinking, how is it possible for me to remain in this world without you? Because the nature of a relationship with the Supreme Personality of the Godhead is that it is so thick. It is so full of rasa. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavato mati. It is so full of the sweet taste of spiritual prema, of spiritual love, that it is intolerable to be separate from the Supreme Lord. It is intolerable. Ayai se iti dhotikaya. The Braja Gopis, when Krishna left Vrindavan, it is actually so touching and it is so interesting to contrast the words of the Braja Gopis with the words of who is the next person to give, to when Krishna leaves, who knows what chapter of the 10th canto, where Krishna, it is that Krishna leaves Sri Vrindavan. Of course, Vrindavanam Pratyasa Padam Ekam Nagachati. He never leaves Vrindavan, but when Krishna leaves in his Leela, who knows what chapter of the 10th canto that is? Around the 40th chapter, but I'll give you a hint, one chapter before the 40th chapter. The 39th chapter, Krishna leaves. So who takes him? Who takes him from Brother? Do you know? Akura, yes. Akura takes him from Vrindavan. And the Gopikas, they offer some words to Krishna that are a kind of prayer, but it is not the kind of prayer that anyone else but the Brother Gopikas can practically offer, because it is just a non-ability to accept that Krishna is going to be away from them. They see him every day. They're in the same village. When you see someone every day, you sort of take it for granted that they're always going to be there. And then when they're not there, the most disturbing thing, especially when that person not being there, is Krishna. Because Krishna and the soul, Krishna and the soul are not different in the sense that Tantra Gyakya Tatapara, the soul is Krishna's Tatastha Shakti, and there is no separation between the individual soul and Krishna, the source, the Shaktiman, the source of all the Shaktis. There cannot be any separation. Mama Angso Teja Sambhava, that nothing in this in existence can actually be separate from Krishna, because it wouldn't be in existence anymore. Because Krishna maintains the existence of everything. Without Krishna, nothing exists. So without Krishna, without the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we would not exist. There's no question of us being separate from him. But Krishna, Buddha says, we turn our back, forgetting Krishna. We turn anadi vahyamo, we turn our back on Krishna. And we feel separate from Krishna. We feel as if we are separate from Krishna. And that is the business of Maya. To make us feel as if we were separate from Krishna, as if we were independent. Well, being independent from Krishna is indeed impossible. Because that is the meaning of Parasatyam, the absolute truth. By definition, he is all-inclusive. There is nothing in existence or non-existence separate from him. That is the definition of the absolute truth, different from the definition of the of God or Ishvara. Param Satyam means the all-inclusive absolute truth. So now, my consciousness, I turn my back on Krishna, with a disastrous result. Because I'm seeing, when I turn my back, I see so many things. And try to enjoy them, become the proprietor of them. Because why do we own things? Why do we feel ourselves the proprietor of something? Because we think it is ours to enjoy. And before we can turn back towards Krishna, we have to give up the sense of proprietorship, which is one of the points of this verse. But Krishna is instructing Uddhava how to be with him, even though Krishna is not going to be in the world, how to be with him in consciousness. And one of the principles that came up is just this, that the sense of proprietorship has to be renounced, even of the most intimate relationships with the material energy that we have, such as what were the things mentioned? Which leads to an interesting question, that how can one deal with these things if one doesn't feel they're ours? And yet, if we keep our consciousness feeling they are mine, then we can't turn. One time I had a dream, well actually many years ago I had this dream quite a few times, that just as I was waking up, I saw a piece of gold or some money. And then as I started to wake more, I saw some more. I saw there was different pieces of gold or money. Did anyone have a dream similar to this? Only me. And I thought, oh no, just as I'm waking up, I'm leaving the dream, and oh, now I'm seeing where there's wealth there. And I didn't want to wake up. No one ever had a dream like that. Did you ever have a dream like that? No. And I didn't want to wake up because I thought there was something there that was of great value for me. And it was going to be mine. I will be the owner of all that wealth. I didn't want to wake up. So similarly, when we feel ourselves the proprietor, the owner, the enjoyer of so many things within this material world, or even anything in this material world, we don't want to turn around. We don't want to turn to Krishna. We don't want to wake up. So therefore, Krishna is telling Uddhava that if you do want to wake up, the servant or disciple of the spiritual master, and why does he have a spiritual master, or why does one serve someone in knowledge, because one wants that knowledge, one wants to wake up. That is the purpose of accepting the shelter of a spiritual master and stepping onto the spiritual path. The purpose is to become awake, to remove the darkness of ignorance. Tamasima Jyotirgama. To leave darkness, leave illusion. Because we can't actually be the proprietor or the owner of anything, not even the smallest particle of a possession in this world. It's such a heavy concept, but yet, who can deny it? And the simple example is, what does it mean to be the proprietor of something? It's yours. And when you leave somewhere, you can take your things with you, but you cannot take my things with you. You better not try anyway. So what is it that we can't take with us? So that is a way of defining what is ours as those things that we can in fact take with us. So what is it that we can in fact take with us when we leave this world? Well, we can go through all the things we normally think of as ours and understand that certainly I can't take my new computer with me, and I can't take all the hard drives with me, and even my bootleg program. Oops, could you take that off the recording, please? And I can't even take my watch.
and my clothes. I can't even take my glasses, and I can't even take my body. What to speak of those things and people related to my body? I can't take anything with me. I can take my consciousness with me. So my consciousness being a symptom of me, that is what I can take with me. It is a very stark and heavy conception to consider. And what to speak of living our life in that way. And not only that, the servant, the disciple of the spiritual master should be free from false prestige. What does prestige mean? What does prestige mean? Yeah, a feeling of, I've done this, I've done that, I've accomplished this, I have this, I've that. What is the Hindi word for prestige? That sense of being bigger than we actually are and more wonderful than we actually are, that is prestige. You've accomplished something. I've achieved in this world. That gives us a sense of prestige or pride, something like pride. We can't even take that with us. Because all that we achieve in this world belongs to this world, and when we leave it, they may write it, they make a plaque on the wall that this building was dedicated by such and such, the honorable such and such MP, MLA, or president, or vice president, or premier, but the plaque remains. The person's body remains, the position remains, but he goes. We can't even take our prestige because it's false. It is false. It actually has nothing to do with us. So one should be free from false prestige. He should never consider himself to be the doer. What does that mean? We use that word, the doer. It's not a term that anyone else uses. What is the Sanskrit for that? It's karta. Kartaham. Itimanyate. This bewilders us. Because what can we do in this world if Krishna pulls the plug from our ability to do, our battery will run out? What can we do independently of Krishna in this world? So what have I done? There's nothing. So one should give up that illusory sense, because we tend to be attached to that, because that gives us our false sense of pride and prestige, and our false sense of existence and security, all false. So Krishna's teaching to Uddhava are these very, very heavy teachings. They're very nice to read and to memorize perhaps, but when one thinks that I'm supposed to do this, that Krishna is not just entertaining us like some Bollywood movie or something, but it's also interesting, like in every Bollywood movie, there has to be a song and a dance, yes? Also in 10th Canto of the Bhagavatam, in the middle of this greatest book, the greatest of songs and dances, the Rasa dance, because that's where it all comes from. But this is not like a movie that we're watching. Krishna is giving these instructions, saying, Uddhava, you do this. If conditional cause, if you want this result, you must do this. If you want to actually turn towards Krishna again, you have to give up your attachments that are causing you
to have your back towards Krishna, because if I'm turned away from Krishna, my back is towards him, and and the process of devotional service is going from Bhajamukh to Samukh. So the Jiva Goswami describes this is the process of devotional service. Its purpose is simply to change our position from having turned our back to Krishna towards facing him. And if we face Krishna with our consciousness, we will be completely enthralled, captivated, enchanted by Krishna, as well as the Braja Gopis. We'll go back to that point before we continue with what Krishna actually told Uddhava in this particular verse. Their prayers were not the type of prayers like Akura recited in the 40th chapter of the 10th canto, where he recites very wonderful prayers and he achieved perfection by reciting these prayers, but they were all with reverence. Oh Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord, you are the maintainer of everything. There's nothing in existence outside of you. These prayers we can feel very comfortable with because they're perfectly suitable for one who is developing a relationship with Krishna, who wants to turn back towards Krishna because he's the all-pervading Supreme Lord, the source of everything, who we are actually, in fact, completely dependent upon, who is the ultimate doer of everything. But the gopis' prayers were completely different. They are just soaked and saturated with love. They are songs of the deepest love. And it's so interesting that Uddhava, when Akura invites, when they arrive in Mathura, in what chapter? What chapter? Well, I'll give you a hint, it's the next one after the prayers. 41. Prayers of 40, then 41. The chariot actually arrives in Mathura. And Uddhava has done his mission, concept, sentence. This is a whole other amazing aspect of the pastime, that concept of Akura, the purpose of him bringing Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, and that purpose was why did he tell Akura what his purpose of holding the whole Dharamjagya, the whole festival, the whole rest, what was the purpose of it? What? You wanted to have Krishna killed because Krishna was, he had heard from the eighth child was going to kill you, and he was bringing Krishna, and the purpose of putting it in the, his only thought was to kill Krishna. But he held a big festival because he knew that if everyone would come, and if the secret got out of the purpose of the festival, and he feared that Nandamaraj would take Krishna far away. But yet, he told Akura the actual purpose. And Akura told Krishna Balaram. And Krishna and Balaram, when they heard this, what did they do? They laughed. Oh, we're going to have a fun weekend. But it wasn't fun for the Brijvasis, who were left behind, and the Braja Gopis. They were kept alive, practically speaking. Their words were just of love. How could this happen? Let us put ourselves in front of the car. Let us stop it. No philosophy. No glorification. Just, oh, Govinda Damodara, Madhavati. Govinda Damodara, Madhavati.
I'm coming. Just by that they kept alive. They were kept alive. And then, so those prayers were the sweetest of the sweetest of sweetest prayers. And occurs was so sweet, so wonderful, and so required to get us to turn towards Krishna, and to get us to give up those attachments on this side that stop us from turning towards Krishna. So he said, never consider himself the doer, because when we think that I am doing it, that word becomes very prominent. I am doing it. And you better recognize who is doing this. You should understand that everything depends on me, and me, and I. A big, false conception of who I am and my position in relationship to the universe. And that it is Krishna who has given everyone the power to do whatever they do. Even the power for the birds to chirp. If Krishna removes that, they cannot chirp. I cannot move my hand. Just imagine how long I would last if Krishna didn't, by his own kind will, just allow my heart to beat, then it's finished. Imagine if I was the one who had to maintain it and do it. Or the breathing. I'd forget. I'd become absorbed in something else and I completely forget. So Krishna takes care of us in a millions of ways. What is it that we are doing by our own power? And if we are not doing anything by our own power, what reason, what excuse do we have for our pride? We should be proud of the things that we ourselves honestly have done by ourselves. But if we're completely dependent on Krishna and ultimately His causeless mercy and His will or whatever ability He's given us, then purusham greshu, He is the ability in man. So what reason do I have to be proud? And yet, I still am. So one should not consider himself the doer. He should be active and never lazy. Why? Why should one not be lazy?
Ignorance.
One should not be lazy. If one is lazy, there is nothing to even offer to Krishna. There's no fruit even. At least one should be active, and activity, you would say, is in Rajagun, but at least there is something to give to Krishna. And ignorance is such a disturbance to the consciousness. Such a disturbance to the consciousness. And one should be active and never lazy and should give up all sense of proprietorship over the objects of the senses. The fault of being active and always being doing things is what? I do things and then I think I have done it and I've done it for my pleasure, and therefore the results that come
they are mine for my enjoyment. So if one is not lazy and active, but yet can give up the sense of proprietorship without that clinging to the results, then one will be in goodness. And then if one does things, taking himself a servant instead of a proprietor, then one's activities, even in goodness, look to transcendence. And just a servant, a thousand times removed, a million times removed, once you give up all sense of proprietorship over the objects of the senses, including his wife, children, home, and society. These are not, we take our sense of self and project it on top of our wife, our children, our house, our car. If someone else's, someone else has their car banged into by another car, we may make believe we're unhappy, but we don't feel pain. But if someone hits our car with their car, you hit me! We become very angry. Of course, we know that's called a hung car. We have full identification with the car. If you don't have any jokes, what is it? A hung car, get it? I am my car. A hung car, right? So the no sense of and look how direct Krishna is. How can he talk like this? Doesn't he want any followers? But yet, one can still act and take care of everything without the sense of proprietorship, that it is mine and meant for my pleasure. Instead, he should be endowed with feelings of loving friendship towards the spiritual master, and should never become deviated or bewildered from that consciousness. Very, 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 very heavy. It sounds easy, but it isn't. It isn't. Unless we can get our spiritual master to tell us just what we want them to tell us. Whatever. Today I want to go to the movies because Mahudasa. Whatever, I want to do this, I want to do that. But no, the relationship should be heavy. Sometimes maybe one's Guru Maharaj will allow us to do what we want to do, and so it moves. But it's so amazing, the concept of even Advaita Charja. Advaita Charja was treated with so much respect by whom? By Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? Because he is so much older, yeah? Yes? He's such a senior, respectable personality. He was the leader of the Vaishnava community. He was so many years older than Mahaprabhu too. But Advaita Charja only wanted to think of himself as a servant of Mahaprabhu. He did not want to be treated with respect. So therefore, he made a plan even. And that plan was to sit in Shantipur and to preach Vishishta Advaita in personal philosophy. And Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu came to the door, and Advaita Charja was sitting on the asana and preaching Vishishta Advaita, and Mahaprabhu came and was so angry at him, he pulled him down from the asana and started beating him. So much that Sita Mata,
wife, Sita Takarani, came and said, "Stop, stop, you're going to kill the old man." An external mood of an internal mood of ecstasy. He's doing that, and then the Dvaita Charya just smiled and said, "Oh, now you have fulfilled my desire because you chastised me so heavily." That's what he wanted. And then Mahaprabhu became very embarrassed, actually, that Advaita Charya had tricked him in that way. But our mood, my mood, tends to be, as soon as someone chastises me or becomes angry with me for something like that, I have my files of all the things they've done wrong and the things they don't like. So as soon as someone does something to me like that, I pull out my files and I build up my case, and my mind starts presenting the case. And don't think that the mind, the crazy mind, the rascal mind, will not do that also. Because the rascal mind is a rascal. It will protect above all else the false ego, the false sense of I am the greatest, I am the center, I'm so wonderful. How dare anyone tell me that I'm doing something wrong? And then when we go into work, our boss tells us, "Yes, yes, boss, yes, boss, yes, boss." So one should be endowed with feelings of loving friendship, and then one will accept the chastisements that are required to help us turn towards the Lord in the proper spirit, and not become alienated or bewildered about what the purpose of life is and what the purpose of the relationship is. The servant or disciple should always desire advancement in spiritual understanding. What word is very, of course all the words are so important, but what word is especially important in there that is sticks out, huh? Yes, it's the always is the hard part. To be consistently always understanding that the purpose of my life, my human tarapa dhruva martyrdom, the purpose of my life is to advance spiritually. Sincere, always thinking in that way. Always desire advancement in spiritual understanding. That means not only, it means always. And he should not envy anyone. Because if we're envious of anyone, why does one become envious of another? Why? Prahlad? Why? Why? Yes, but why does one become envious of another? That's, I was thinking of a more superficial answer. So that's why if you see someone who, yes, that's true. Huh? They have something that we don't have. And we think we should have everything that we have. Of course, it's obvious. I should have everything that I want. And no one's allowed to have anything more than me. Of anything. Oh, no, you should understand this very clearly. No one is allowed to have anything more than me. Not a better car, not a better watch, not a better computer, not stronger, not more intelligent, and no one's allowed to do anything that I can't do either, etc. And because this is the job of the false ego in the mind, to make us think like this. If we say it consciously, if just imagine if we had a direct loud speaker
somehow mind, and everyone could hear what we were thinking. What would happen? We wouldn't have any friend. We would be in jail. Because these are the thoughts that we actually have in our mind. You know, no one should have a false, because it's based on ahankara. It's based on the false sense of being the center of everything because we're centered on Krishna. This is the curse that accompanies Krishna's kindness in giving us what we want, the misuse of our free will. And we don't want to be insignificant servants of Krishna. We want to be the center. So we're the center, but we can't be the center, so he gives us an illusory universe that we float within, making believe in our own mind that we're the center, and no one, because it is Krishna that no one is more beautiful than. It is Krishna that has every opulence. It is Krishna who plays musical instruments better than anyone else. It is Krishna who knows every single language. He is the wealthiest. He is the most famous. So why should we give up envy of not only Krishna but everyone else? And the reason is because if we're envious of anyone because they have something that we don't have, just imagine how envious we would be of Krishna. If we cannot stop being envious of the people we interact with on a day-by-day basis, then how are we going to not be envious of Krishna? So all these, you should do this, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this, is to bring us that we have the ability to turn towards Krishna. And the final thing, we should not envy anyone. And what is the final thing in the verse over here? That's, what is it?
Should not speak nonsense.
Huh?
Should not speak nonsense.
But it doesn't say you should not speak nonsense. Because all day long I'm speaking nonsense. Inside. Please keep it inside. Don't pollute anyone else with the nonsense that goes on in your mind, in my mind. Avoid useless. Kamyakatana. Huh? Sunive. What is it? It doesn't say don't speak nonsense. That's what Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami. But he gave him a more wonderful instruction that's, in one sense, easier to follow. It's more in our control. What did he say? Ramyakritana Srinibe. Do you know what that means? What does it mean? Don't hear it. Don't hear anyone else speaking. Ramyakata, or just useless, just talk sitting around. Don't listen to anyone else. And then, if we find we're talking to people and everyone walks away from us, not wishing to hear, then maybe we will also learn not to speak it, too. We'll understand. Don't become involved in these things. Don't become involved in the pettiness, small-mindedness of this world. Small-minded, petty thinking. No one likes it. Do you notice that when you just sit around and talk badly about people, do you notice how, if you actually feel, introspect a little bit, see how your heart feels, it feels terrible after. Terrible. Why do we do it? It's such a bad habit that feeds and strengthens the false ego. As if by criticizing others, it makes me any better than I am. Should not envy anyone, should not, and should always avoid useless conversation. so that we will grow in our spiritual life. So we will grow in our spiritual life, and we will grow up to the point of actually prema, pumarto mahan. This is the purpose. Mahaprabhu came to give unata ujara rasam sabhaktim seyam. Came to give something so wonderful. So wonderful. Okay, stop here. Already a little late. Any questions or comments? I'm sorry, because it's a subtle question perhaps, and I didn't hear it so properly. That the consciousness, our consciousness will go with us? No, I didn't say that. But the things produced of our particular false ego, this particular false ego in this body, will be left behind. That's what I meant anyway. So for instance, say if I have a PhD in philosophy and I've written many books under my name and my name has become very famous, all those things will be left behind. The books, the fame, etc. But I will find another false ego when I go to my next body. Something like that. Does that answer your question as to what I meant? Is that right? Yes, Paul.
Maharaj, sometimes we want to simplify our lives, but we get too many challenges in that journey towards simplification, simply because there is always a conflict of expectations, fulfilling the expectations of our near and dear ones. So how does one go about balancing this?
One point first, that it seems wise to simplify our life quite regularly, to go through the process of making our life more simple, because it's quite amazing how quickly it rebuilds. Even after we simplify our life, it quickly rebuilds itself into something complicated that becomes confusing and difficult to maintain and organize. How quickly it becomes like that. So we should regularly attempt to simplify our life, not it's once done and it's done. So how do we find balance? So so the way I see it, here is our simplest life, the simplest part of our life, or what we could ideally be. And then here are the expectations that we have for ourselves and other from others. Yes? And we live in the tension between these two things. And we have to consider always, very regularly, what needs more balancing right now? Which side do I have to lean towards right now? So you can't, from what I've seen, or it's very rare that someone can make a decision and remain in that simple decision regardless of the changes that happen according to time, place, and circumstances. So we always have to be considering, what needs more, which direction should I lean towards now? Do you follow what I mean? And there's no way to avoid the tension of living in that. And the tension, of course, is not pleasant. But to keep balance in the material world is a tension. It's unavoidable, practically speaking. The only way to avoid tension is to be dead. practically speaking. So there are the expectations of others, and if we completely save, I think of it using the example I've mentioned to you before, riding a bicycle. So how do you stay balanced when riding a bicycle? Sometimes you have to lean this way, and sometimes you're leaning that way, and sometimes you're leaning this way according to the time and the circumstance and what you're confronted with. So very regularly we should look at our life and see, I want to make my progress towards the spiritual goal of the lotus feet of Sri Sri Hare Krishna service and Sri Rajadam and Mahaprabhu service. And if I lean too much this way, then I'm not going to be able to handle the repercussions from the expectations of others. So therefore, now I have to move a little bit this way to keep them happy so I can move forward. And now I've kept them happy, and now my spiritual life, the creeper of my devotional service is feeling so dry, I better spend more time just hearing and chanting, and then I... And we live in the tension of that. If someone was strong enough, and there have been many examples of this, of someone who says, you know, like even this example of Srila Sridhar Swami, the authoritative commentator on the Bhagavatam, wanted to leave home, and then there was a child, one of his children was just born, and he thought, how could I leave this child unprotected? And then he saw a little lizard, a tick-tick, was born, and immediately it found a bug and ate it, and he just said, this is Krishna's sign, and Krishna will take care of him, and he just left. But who can do that and not be always in anxiety and etc. and then come back again we don't want to do this. So we live in the tension. If we're strong enough, we should go as straight as we practically can. The operative word being practically. And what we don't want is this and this and this. So we live in the tension and we move forward towards our goal of loving devotional service to Krishna as quickly as we practically can. And then the specific answer is, what should I do right now, considering my specific situation right now? You have to go to someone who you really trust and who knows you very, very well and will answer you in such a way that takes all things into consideration and that you will be able to accept that answer. Is that alright? The problem is when we decided to turn our back on Krishna, we didn't read the fine print of the conditions that apply and all that, the things in the very little writing that we... You accept this, and we put yes, I accept it, but we never read. So many details. Well, we have to find our place and our balance and live in the tension of it. Any other questions or comments? He should be endowed with feelings of loving friendship towards the spiritual master. Let's see, exactly over here. Vrida Saurida, that's also from Talad Maharaj, says this, uses these exact words. And also this. Also, the concept is being continued from the second chapter of the 11th canto as well. So that's Bhayam Pratiya of the innovation tasya verse. But just the idea, friends, do we trust our friend? Our deepest friend? We will, do we? Why? Faith, yes. That? Yes, because of the loving relationship. So friendship is a type of love. The trusting that this person has my well wishes, only my well wishes in mind. That he will not do anything that will be harmful for me. And that he has affection. And that way, because of affection, he would not do anything other than for my own welfare. So, how will we be able to follow the instructions of our spiritual master? Unless we trust that they have, that our spiritual master has our own interest in mind. And appreciate, loving appreciation of His mercy to us. Okay. Is that okay? Any other questions or comments?
What does it mean by true prestige?
True prestige. As opposed to false prestige, what is actual prestige? To follow the order of our spiritual master as a servant fills us with an honest sense of doing something by his mercy, and we can feel proud of that. Our Prabhupada talks about this whether it's in the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says after the spiritual master's departure, his order is the pride of the devotee, that he has some orders to follow, some service to do. But we should perform our service without the feeling, without the feeling of being independent of his mercy or the mercy of Krishna. We can do something from the mood of service, and we can do wonderful things as long as we don't remove our consciousness, if our consciousness doesn't become removed from the fact that we are servants. We can do wonderful things, and we can feel, yes, I've done something by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, etc., by the mercy of Prabhupada, by the mercy of Radha Vallabha. I've done something for their pleasure. What was it? Yeah. Is that all right? Any other questions or comments? It's getting time for. You have any questions? Not even one? Small one? Big one? Anyone else? Question or comment? We sit here again and again and again and again and again and again and again. The instructions of the Bhagavad that are given to us in the Bhagavatam, they will purify our heart, remove our illusions, and will push us on the proper path. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Radha Vallabha ki jai. Kisi Nittai Gaur ki jai. Kisi Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi ki jai. Kisi Radha Vallabha Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Jai.